Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Historic day. It's the 15th of October, 2009. The headline on my website says, Savage to read historic speech today on air. Banned talker to deliver speech intended for Cambridge University debate. A milestone in American broadcasting. No American media personality has ever been banned by a Western nation. Savage's plight has been ignored by Fox News, ABC, CBS, NBC, and all major newspapers. The speech of the century that never was will be broadcast across America on all of the hundreds of radio stations that carry the Michael Savage Show. Listeners around the world will join us and listen to what Britain has banned via the Internet. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Let me begin by saying that liberals once warned the world about Big Brother. Remember the 60s? They were saying, watch out for Big Brother. That means an all-intrusive government that would overpower us, snoop on us, control us from cradle to grave. Well, now that the liberals are Big Brother, now that the liberals have become Big Brother, huh? And now that they are Big Brother, it is in the hands of others to defend our fundamental liberties. Conservatives, libertarians, and independents are all resisting the dictatorial machinations of Barack Obama and his minions. So-called liberals are notoriously silent and absent in this epic battle for freedom. And here we sit today on the Savage Nation. Today I have to give you a speech that I never intended to give. What happened? Why am I here? What is this all about? Why is it so important to you? Well, on May 5th, I woke up to find out that I, Michael Savage, have been put on a list with murderers and terrorists. Let me say that again. A list of individuals banned from entering the United Kingdom, not so much for what they have said, but for what they had done. And the illegitimate Brown administration, the Gordon Brown Labor Socialist government, the people now hiding in a bunker as they're about to be thrown out the door, these people have now said that speech is activity. They have made speech the same thing as action. So they've made murder the same thing as speech, which they can condemn. And so I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, are they liberals? Would you define that as liberalism, or would you define that as socialism or fascism? Well, I'll let you decide what you would define it as. I know what I define it as. But I'm in a quandary. I always liked the English people. I always liked England. And soon after this happened, I made many, many appearances on British television, Sky News, the BBC. Yes, CNN covered me, but not Fox News. Yes, there was a little coverage in some great newspapers like the Washington Times, but not the New York Times. Yes, and think about this, folks. Michael Savage is the only current member of the American media ever honored with a profile in the liberal iconic publication, The New Yorker. Let me repeat that. The New Yorker is an icon of the liberal establishment. Well, they covered Michael Savage. It was a, I would say, middle-of-the-road coverage. It wasn't particularly one way or the other. And yet, I'm still not heard from on Fox News. But you're going to hear from me today on The Savage Nation, the speech that never was, canceled by government intimidation. So let me begin at the beginning. Mr. President, my fellow debaters, ladies and gentlemen, or shall I stop right now? Why don't we begin with an actual opening from Cambridge University, the opening that you should have heard had Cambridge University lived by its traditions. Let's hear it, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cambridge Union Society this evening for this very special debate. We have a distinguished lineup of guests, many, many MPs, as well as, of course, our guest of honor.
Michael Savage!
Well, my chair will be empty tonight. This group of children who has taken over the Cambridge Debating Society have given the society a black eye that they will never recover from. Now, they will try to hide it from their own archives, but remember, I don't think this has ever occurred before. The government of the Gordon Brown administration no doubt intimidated them, that's my guess, with the threat of cutting off funds. So I will debate as though I am there, even though my chair is empty. Mr. President, my fellow debaters, ladies and gentlemen, I've been invited to debate before you tonight against the insanity of political correctness because a terrible injustice has been done. In May of this year, former Home Secretary Jackie Smith, now fired, released a list of murderers and terrorists banned from entering the United Kingdom. Michael Savage was also included on this list. In doing this to me, she has linked and listed one of America's most beloved radio talk show hosts who has 10 million listeners alongside Russian skinheads who are in prison for having murdered 10 immigrants and videoed the murders, as well as a Hamas murderer who executed two Jewish parents, hunted down their four-year-old daughter who had hid inside a crawl space, and when he found the little child, he crushed in her head with a rifle butt. That's right, my name is on a list with those people. Would not criminals of this caliber be arrested immediately upon entry into the United Kingdom? Or does this imply that all but those on the list are allowed into the United Kingdom? For example, Osama bin Laden was not in this list. Would he be allowed to enter the UK? Why would someone who has never committed a crime, nor appeared as a defendant in a criminal trial, nor been accused of an actual crime, be placed on such a high-profile list by a major nation of the West? I say that it is because of the continuing erosion of freedom of speech in America, in the United Kingdom, and in all nations where such liberties are supposedly granted, and this under the dirty veil of political correctness. My continued dedication to the principles of borders, language, and culture should seem no threat to a nation diligently aware of its own national identity. Admittedly, in my broadcasts, I may not reflect the keen and cool dignity of British gentility, but I have Savile Row in my soul. I must assume, then, that I pose a threat to the government, and one just as frightening as the most dangerous of international terrors, the thought criminal. This is a person whose thoughts and ideas are so powerful that they lead people to disobey the establishment. George Washington knew this. George Washington had become a thought criminal of the United Kingdom. Did you know that? And history has shown us that when an injustice is being done to a people, they rebel. It is those quiet, peaceful decisions made behind closed doors by polite gentlemen and their associates in seedy back rooms, shrouded in smoke, that provoke the people to action. Secret decisions with no oversight or communication of the kind which sidestep laws and civil liberties with total disregard for the voting public. This is what led to the tyrants of Hitler, Stalin, Castro, Hugo Chavez. We can throw a few others in. Rulers who, when given an inch, will run thousands of miles, perhaps right through our own homes. Ladies and gentlemen, people who disagree with the status quo, whether it's called political correctness or anything else, must speak up and be counted for, speak for themselves, and question authority. I, Michael Savage, have done nothing but this. Yet my opinions are casually shrugged off by so-called liberals in the government and in the media as valueless because they are not politically correct, an ideology with strict guidelines for what should be said and what should not be said in the limelight. Let me explain something. My crime is really nothing more than being a nationalist, a man who loves America, a man who has defined America as a nation defined by its borders, language, and culture. That is anathema to the internationalist Gordon Brown, Barack Obama, and the other internationalists who have now seized democracies across the globe. And as political correctness erodes the volume and value of our vocabulary, so too does it erode our freedom of speech and freedom to hold our lawmakers accountable. Accountable! An idea which in a modern sense can be traced at least as far back as the Magna Carta. People and their culture are not to be homogenized until they are compatible with other cultures and people. Compatibility must come from within, from debate and discourse and compromise and even legislation, but not from an arbitrary standard which might work for some people in some nations, but not, as Lincoln said, to apply to all of the people all of the time. When I come back, I will ask you, what kind of kingdom has Britain become? Does it still value free speech? This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I I'd like to return now to my Freedom of Speech Award speech, which is a new freedom of speech, which is the ability to speak via talk radio and over the Internet, something not yet banned by Barack Hussein Obama and Gordon Brown. And every word I'm about to say to you comes from my heart. Whether it's the truth or not will be for you to determine. I swear on my Bible that what I'm telling you is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I challenge Gordon Brown to do the same in his bunker in London. Let him get out a Bible. Let him get out the King James Bible and swear to God that he knows that I belong on that list. I doubt very much that he'd be able to do that. Now, what kind of kingdom has Britain become? Isn't freedom of speech a value that Western nations must preserve at all costs? One which sets us apart from dictatorship, anarchy, and fatal corruption? Yet it is precisely because of my freedom of speech that I've been targeted by the socialist government in England. This combined with the appointment of the American FCC's new diversity czar in the United States are further steps towards the extinguishing of independent thought on the airwaves and the so-called restructuring of free media based on the FCC's diatribe, according to Mark Lloyd, the diversity czar. Listen to me. In 2007, I was awarded the Freedom of Speech Award by Talkers Magazine. How could the winner of such an award be singled out and banned from traveling to Britain? Well, let's look at it another way. I remember in the 1960s when true liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. When have you last heard a liberal say, oh, I may disagree with conservative talk radio, but I would fight to the death their right to say what they believe in? I don't hear that anymore. What instead I hear is, oh, I think it's time to pass a standard to bring accountability to the airwaves. That was stated earlier this year by left-wing Democrats in the House of Representatives. I realize saying left-wing Democrats is an oxymoron. Is that liberalism? Aren't Britain and the U.S. about freedom of speech? That's what this nation has been about from the day it was founded. That's the trail of tears and the trail of blood that led to the freedoms that we enjoy in this nation today. And we cannot permit a few small-minded martinets who don't even know that they're inhabiting the souls of dictators in Congress right now to deny us a freedom of speech. Where are the true good liberals? Where are they? Let's take radio, for example. It's about political correctness. Today, radio is in a more perilous state than it's been in its entire history. In South America, the dictator Hugo Chavez closed down the opposition media in Venezuela. You say, well, that can't happen here. It can happen here. It can happen in America. It's already happened in England. As I speak with you, it is happening in America. Senator Tom Harkin, Senator Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico, Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois, and even House Speaker Nancy Pelosi were recently circulating a bill in Congress for the so-called fairness doctrine. What is that? Fairness? It's not fairness. It would require the holders of broadcast licenses to present controversial issues of public importance in a manner that was, in the view of the FCC, honest, equitable, and balanced. What does that actually mean? What is honest, what is equitable, and what is balanced? Well, it's a form of political correctness. What this would mean is that people such as myself would no longer be able to speak freely. Would that be any different than Chavez closing down opposition media? Is that not dictatorship, the fairness doctrine? Of course it is. It's just that we use fancy rhetoric in this country as opposed to police powers. But make no mistake about it. The fairness doctrine is political correctness. It is censorship, and it has no place in the United States of America. Let me go to another point. Here in America, we enjoy the freedoms afforded us in the First Amendment. The First Amendment is very clear. In Britain, there is no First Amendment. And yet, we see in Britain, speech is already being amended and controlled by liberals who may not like what you're saying. Let's make sure that never happens here in America. Now, let me give you some other examples of the power of freedom of speech. For example, I have said many times that Al Gore is a liar when he preaches that all scientists now agree that global warming is caused by human activity. If I can refute Gore's lies on the airwaves by citing numerous prominent scientific studies which refute Gore's hysterical con, I am using freedom of speech granted to me by the United States Constitution to do so. If radical environmental freaks were to make it a crime to deny global warming, did you hear what I just said to you? There are radical environmental freaks in the Obama administration, in the United Nations and elsewhere, who want to make it a crime to deny global warming. You've heard that, didn't you? They say they want to criminalize anyone who denies global warming. Well, such refutations as mine and those of prominent scientists would be banished from the discussion. Let's look at Iran. Ahmadinejad, the new Hitler of our time, the so-called president of Iran, has said that the Holocaust never occurred. The Holocaust never occurred, he says. Yet there's ample evidence in film, in video, and other places that could be shown at the United Nations. And he's also declared his desire to create a new Holocaust against the Jews in Israel. And yet we see prominent lawyers and journalists, some of Jewish descent even, in our own nation denying the Islamo-fascist connection. Worst, even defending Islamic murderers, for example, in Guantanamo, who would gladly cut their throats and decapitate them while chanting to Allah. Why do they do this? They do it out of fear of offending the SS of today, the Islamo-fascists. They refuse to talk about the codification of hatred for the West, for freedom, for Jews, for Israel, for the United States, and our way of life. That is freedom of speech, is it not? Well, what is freedom of speech? Why do these intellectuals who defend Ahmadinejad deny their own freedom of speech to defend the freedom to preach hatred by their enemies? Why? I'll let you decide why. It's all about fear. Something else about freedom of speech you should know about, and that would be sarcasm, ridicule, and satire. These are elements of freedom. And yet, do you know that there was a time in the history of England when people could be condemned to death for using satire, sarcasm, and ridicule towards their rulers? I'd like to show you what that looks like. It's behind me in one of the masks, actually. I'll hold it up for you right now for those of you who are going to see this on a video one day. Here is what they would like to do to talk show hosts in America who do not espouse the Obama-Brown line. They'd like to put a bit in our mouth and forbid us from speaking. But we can use derision, my friends. We can use all of these tools, including sarcasm. What is sarcasm? Sarcasm's a harsh or bitter derision or irony, a sharply ironical taunt, a sneering or cutting remark, a review full of sarcasms. That's freedom of speech, sure to offend those targeted. You think I limit it to the left? You're wrong. I also offend doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans such as George Bush and his administration. I don't limit my criticism to the Democrats or the liberals. When I point out the contractor abuses in Iraq and Afghanistan, whose freedoms was I denying? This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Continue now, and I will conclude shortly with my speech that I would have given today via video link to the Cambridge Debating Society that was abruptly canceled without warning, just as my name was put on a list without warning. This is a giant conspiracy, but I want to repeat again, what I'm about to say to you is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and I challenge Gordon Brown to put his hand on a King James Bible and say that everything he's about to say is the truth and nothing but the truth. All right. And I want to repeat again that I don't just go after liberals or Democrats. For years, I criticized the contractor abuses in Iraq under George Bush. Whose freedoms was I denying then? You have to understand that I am an independent. I am not a Democrat. I am not a Republican. I am not a liberal. I'm not really a conservative. By definition, I'm probably a nationalist. But that's a discussion for another time. But whose freedoms was I denying when I pointed out the contractor abuses for years on my radio program? Was it the freedoms of the military-industrial complex to rob the public? President Eisenhower once warned us to beware the military-industrial complex. I played his speech on my show over and over again. Now, who was I criticizing by playing that speech, Democrats or Republicans? I'll let you decide. When I state that our Army and Marine heroes are being sent in to fight door-to-door, and suffer and die, and suffer and die, and then they are given court-martials if they do their job a little too well, because Obama is either the most hesitant or incompetent commander-in-chief in the history of this nation, whose freedoms am I denying? President Bush said he would not have politicians telling our generals how to conduct the war. Well, I wonder, was he not a politician telling generals how to conduct the war? No war, whether it was in Iraq under Bush or Afghanistan and Iraq under Obama. No war has ever been conducted like this. The same mistakes are being repeated by Obama in Afghanistan. Again, how about another issue? the monster issue, the one that they all want to hide, the issue of 30 million illegal aliens swarming across the United States of America. When I call illegal aliens invaders, and I present the social and fiscal drain that this invading army of illegal aliens is causing on our society, whose freedoms am I denying? Who am I offending? Is it the doctrinaire, knee-jerk Republicans or the Democrats? Probably both. When I, Michael Savage, support my position for borders, language, and culture, do I deny my fellow citizens their rights to redress their grievances to a government all too eager to continue flooding our nation with cheap laborers? When I present the fact that 30% or one out of three prisoners in federal prison is an illegal alien who came to this nation, one out of three prisoners in federal prison is an illegal alien who committed a felony, somebody who didn't belong here to begin with. Do I deny or do I grant my fellow U.S. citizens their right to speak freely through me, a talk show host? Whose rights was I offending? Whose rights was I denying? Certain special interests, I would assume. If these and other like opinions of mine were mine alone, I would not have risen to this position I now enjoy in the world of the spoken and written word. In fact, I am the voice of the voiceless who have been marginalized and silenced by the illiberal liberals who control virtually all avenues of images and ideas that the world now sees. All images and ideas controlled by the radical left, with the limited exception of conservative talk radio, the most vulnerable medium, now under attack by the new national socialists who would, well, I really should say the new national international socialists who would ban free speech that they disagree with by threatening sponsors through extortionist means of false boycotts or by using other techniques but wanting to achieve the same ends of any dictatorship. And what is that end? The total control of speech, which is the opposite of freedom of speech. Not only is this politically incorrect, it is categorically incorrect. So-called political correctness has no place in a free society. In conclusion, I want you to remember this. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was written not to protect polite speech. It was written to protect offensive speech. Vigorous, loud debate is the hallmark of a free society, not the pitiful morgue of politeness. I'm Michael Savage, and I've just presented my arguments against political correctness. In a speech that was supposed to have been broadcast to England, to the Cambridge Debating Society, but was arbitrarily cut off just before broadcast by a group of children who have inherited a great, great university's debating society and have trashed it owing to pressures by the Gordon Brown administration, in my opinion. In a few minutes now, I will now open up this radio program, this live broadcast, to callers at 1-800-449-8255. You're now free to call. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I'll be right back to take your calls right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
All right, look, you know, I gave you the speech. It's over. Savage read his historic speech today on the air that was intended for Cambridge University. You heard it. We don't have to talk about it anymore. We can just have fun. We can talk about things that would appeal to the Oprah listener. We can talk about sports, the boy in the balloon, you know, stuff that appeals to the Society of Professional Journalists. You don't want to hear about the other news of the day, but I'll tell you what, I'll read a little bit of it. Here are some of my headlines from my website. Congress steals dollars from troop funds for ammo for Kennedy Library. Did you hear that one? Oh, didn't make it to your local paper? That's right. It came out in the Washington Times, though. Senators diverted $2.6 billion in funds in a defense spending bill to pet projects largely at the expense of accounts that pay soldiers for fuel, ammunition, and training for U.S. troops. And by the way, $50 million of it went to the Kennedy Library. Can you believe what's going on? Can you believe what's going on in your nation? Have you ever seen a meltdown like this in your lifetime? And this goes across the aisles, by the way. Senators diverted $2.6 billion, including $20 million to launch an educational institute named after the late Senator Edward Kennedy, Massachusetts. In other words, let's say it like it is. Money that was supposed to go for the soldiers who are fighting for our freedom, whether you believe in it or not, doesn't matter what you think. They're on the line. They need fuel. They need ammunition. They need training. The money was diverted, I would call it stolen, by a distinguished ladies and gentlemen in the Senate and in the Congress. $20 million of it went to the Kennedy Institute. Now, you know about earmarks, don't you? Well, we heard about them for years, and we heard that Obama would eliminate them, didn't you? Remember the speech he gave? Remember Hussein Obama? He's going to eliminate earmarks? Are you ready for this one? A former Senate staffer who worked on defense funding for both Republicans and Democrats said this: in 30 years on Capitol Hill, I never saw Congress mangle the defense budget as badly as this year. Mangle? Are you kidding me? Senator Tom Coburn, an Oklahoma Republican, called the transfer of funds from Pentagon operations and maintenance a disgrace. So there's your nation now under the most honest administration in history. 1-800-449-8255. That's one piece of news. Oh, there are many other stories that I haven't even gotten to yet, but I need a break right now from the pressure that I'm carrying on my back right now. Frankly, I don't want to do this anymore. Let's take some callers. San Francisco, Dan, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, Michael. Pleasure to talk to you. I don't want you to bear the cross too hard, man. You're carrying it way too hard. And, you know, don't expect anything from that drunk Gordon Brown. You know,
I didn't expect this speech to even be heard by him. I understand he's hiding in his bunker, and the newspapers in England are claiming he's popping pills, et cetera. But wouldn't you have expected the United States government to intervene on behalf of a U.S. citizen forbidden to travel from England, in England?
Well, I think they probably are. It's just the intricacies of the situation. You got to rise above it. You're letting it get to you just a little bit too much, and that makes the enemy think that you're being had. You're being played. You got to rise above it.
Well, I would like to say I agree with you, but you're not me, are you? It's easy to give people advice, but, you know, walk in my moccasins for a mile before telling me how to walk in my moccasins for a mile. New York City, WOR, Patricia, you're first up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, after listening to the speech, now I know why you were disinvited to speak. Gordon Brown would probably have had to resign within a week or two after your speech. And the reason I say that is because I think it was Jackie Smith.
Yes.
Before even any invitation went out to you, wound up having to resign herself without you ever having stepped foot in England. And
here's what happened. Let me explain that one. It's very important for the historical record. I was banned on May 5th. Soon thereafter, the BBC sent a film crew to me, Sky News, etc. I gave many interviews. The minute my speech ran on BBC, the very next day she was forced to resign. Because a poll was done in England, and 80% of the people in England were on my side. So they threw her overboard. They threw her under the bus, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That would mean that Gordon Brown would suffer the same fate because they didn't...
Absolutely. If I were ever given a fair hearing in England, Gordon Brown would be out of office the next day. If the people would actually see me and hear me speak, it would be over for this illegitimate administration in England. So I understand all of that. But, you know, Cambridge has had a debating society since 1815. Don't they understand what they just did to themselves by disinviting me at the last minute and forbidding me from speaking? They've given themselves a perennial black eye.
But they know in their hearts what you say is true, with even having you have to step foot on the land. So what they did was they aborted your ability to make a speech that would be heard around the world.
Well, Geert Wilders was just found innocent, in essence, the other day, and he's going to be going to England presenting his movie Fitna, which is a condemnation of radical Islam, which he says is threatening to take over all of Western Europe. He was banned also by Jackie Smith, and yet his ban was overturned. So I'm hopeful that in the very near future I'll have good news for all of my listeners on the Savage Nation. But I have good news for you, Patricia, because we have only a few hundred copies left of Banned in Britain, the first printing, first edition. I'm going to reserve one and give you one for absolute free today on the Savage Nation, okay? Thank you very much for listening. Well, what else would you like to talk about? Do you think we've already lost our freedom of speech? Now, that's a bigger question. I believe that many people have thrown away their freedom of speech out of fear of Obama. I will say that again so you get it clear. The effects of the diversities are... The effects of the new pressure being borne by the radio corporations of America have already been felt. And I believe that censorship is already in place, which is the goal of this dictatorship that is emerging in the United States of America. I believe that they have intended to put pressures on radio groups, and they have succeeded beyond their wildest imagination in the sense that many people have been taken off the air in various markets. Others have self-censored for fear of what might happen to them. And frankly, you don't have to look any further than me in the sense that I've been banned from Fox News. So what more do they have to do? Where do we have to go next in order to see what's going on in the world? Now, there's a bigger picture that has to be looked at here. I was banned not for what I said, but because of the fact that I'm actually an American nationalist or a patriot. Do you realize that in your own lifetime you're witnessing patriotism becoming a crime? And the reason is because patriotism is applied usually to a nation, which is to ideals if you're an American, for example. In the case of, let us say, if you're a patriot for North Korea, your ideals are not that of freedom. Your ideals are that of dictatorship. But in America, patriotism means the willingness to adhere to the ideals of our founding fathers. Those ideals are not necessarily in accord with the emerging new internationalist socialist world order. And so the greatest crime you can commit in America today, politically that is to be an overt nationalist. Because the internationalists who began not so much with George Bush has been an internationalist for a long time. In fact, when he ran for office in the year 2000, I knew what he was because I knew his father's policies were those of an internationalist and a new world orderist. We understood that. We knew what we were gambling with. We understood that it was either him or Al Gore. And so we had to take the lesser of two evils. And this has been going on for so long in America right now that the people are at a breaking point. They're always given a choice between the lesser of two evils. Well, I would like to say that we are long overdue for the better of the two evils, or shall we say the better of no evils. Let's put it to you that way. Where are the candidates who stand for borders, language, and culture? Where are the broadcasters who stand for borders, language, and culture? When have you last heard any broadcaster who declares himself to be a conservative define himself as a person who believes in borders, language, and culture? Nowhere else but on the Savage Nation, which is why I have been banned in Britain, by the way. Herb in New York on WOR, welcome to the show.
Michael, how are you? I just heard your speech. I thought it was well-written, well-delivered, and it's a disgrace that the media is not covering your story. It really is.
Well, Herb, you know what? I laid awake last night thinking about one thing, about how lucky I am and how honored I am to be broadcast across America. Not only heard in New York City, but you name the city, I'm heard in that city in this country. And I realize what a gift that is and what a blessing it is. And I'm not just using words. It's a miracle that you could even hear this speech, Herb. Do you realize that?
I realize it. And I hope what they're trying to do doesn't come to pass. I really do.
Well, I'm the first, but I may not be the last, unless the others understand the danger they're putting themselves in by ignoring the situation because it's about me. They don't understand they could be next tomorrow. What about my story that senators diverted $2.6 billion in funds that were supposed to be spent for fuel, ammunition, and training and gave it to their pet projects, including $20 million for a Kennedy library? How does that sit with you, Herb?
Oh, man, it's really a shame. Michael, I pray for you and I pray for this country. I hope better days are ahead. I really do.
Okay, let's leave it at that. Thank you very much for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Unfortunately, right now I have a little problem with my call screener and I'm alone in the studio as usual, trying to get reconnected to my audience. So I'll read you some of the other stories on michaelsavage.com. We have just 200 copies left, by the way, of Banned in Britain Beating a Liberal Blacklist. If you'd like to get that, now's the time to get it. 1-800-449-8255. Here's some other stories. There's a great article by Daniel Henninger, which we linked up from the Wall Street Journal, entitled Obama's Decadent Nobel. Obama's Decadent Nobel. I'm not going to read it to you. You have to read it to yourself. Obama's new pastor says Islam is violent. More than a year after he was forced to disown a Chicago pastor, Obama has begun to attend services led by a Christian chaplain who views Islam as a violent faith. You didn't know that, did you? Al-Qaeda ties exposed the New York City bomb plot. Did you know about that? The airport shuttle driver accused of plotting a bombing in New York had contacts with Al-Qaeda that went nearly all the way to the top. Connected to that in some ways in the minds of millions of Americans is an article on the book that just came out. CAIR, who I was in a lawsuit with about a year and a half ago, spent $160,000 to try to run me off the air. Did you know that? Now, I've been in lawsuits for over 2 years, lawsuits that I didn't choose to initiate. that I've been enmeshed in. I didn't enter the radio business in order to spend the last good years of my life in courts and talking to lawyers, but that's where I am. And very soon, this will all come to an end. One way or the other, this is going to come to an end. That's all I can say to you. Obama personal popularity at a new low. Byron York, Washington Examiner. Gallup points out that in his latest survey, Obama's personal popularity is at a new low. Majority of Nobel jury objected to the Obama Prize. Did you hear about that one? You didn't hear about that one. Instead, you heard guys say that they're going to put a CO2 cartridge in the face of a talk show host and hope that he dies. He didn't lose his job. Yet that front man for the radical left in this country, who I have called softball for many years, should be banned from America, let alone banned from Britain. Is that freedom of speech to say that a fellow broadcaster should be killed? That's your idea of a joke? That's your idea of a freedom of speech that occurred on an affiliate of NBC? Majority of Nobel jury objected to the Obama Prize. Another drugged official. Drug test for Congress now. What am I talking about? Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who had cancer surgery early this year. Well, I don't know what they're bringing that up with. She fell from a seat aboard an airplane, and they took her to a hospital. Well, my sympathies go out to the justice, but I suspect it's time for her to step aside. Why in the world are we not demanding drug tests for Congress now? Do you have any idea how many of our officials' decisions make no sense whatsoever, unless you put them in the context that they may be on drugs, prescription, and otherwise? If you take a job in a corporation, don't you have to pass a drug test? If you play for a sports team, don't you have to pass a drug test? I know you do. Why is Congress immune from such drug tests? Doesn't it strike you that many of them are in a sort of gray zone, a world of their own? The things they say, the bills they pass, they walk around as though they're in 18th century England wearing wigs, talking to each other as that they're really ladies and gentlemen, and the rest of us are nothing but begging peasants that they can spit upon, steal our money, pass socialized medicine no matter what we say and call us the Nazis? Drug tests for Congress now.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Regular broadcasting or regular programming on the Savage Nation. We don't want to bore you with the truth. You know, it gets a little too heavy for the average listener, given the normal fare that you hear in the media today. You know, everything ha-ha, ho-ho, everything degenerate, dirty, anti-American, hate your mother, hate your father, hate the military, hate the police, and worship Obama. You know, we don't want to upset you if that's what you're normally listening to. But I just got through reading an historic speech today on the air that will live for a very, very long time. Not only for those of you who heard it, but we did a video of it, and I don't know what we're going to do with it yet, but it was a milestone in American broadcasting. There are other stories. It doesn't have to be about freedom of speech, although I must tell you, if you lose your freedom of speech, what good will the news be? Don't you understand what I'm trying to say to you, that the most fundamental of all liberties, I would argue perhaps the Second Amendment might be more important than the First, because if you lose the Second, you're going to lose the First. I've heard that said, and I actually agree with the people, that once the Second Amendment goes, you have Cuba. You know, one of the first things Castro did was seize the guns, even the hunting rifles of the Cubans, and then he turned them into the serfs, the slaves, that he said that he would eliminate in Cuba. He became far worse than Batista ever was. And so I do agree with those of you who say the Second Amendment is primary. However, what's the good of a First Amendment if you don't use it? I want to repeat again what I'm saying. The First Amendment gives us the right to free speech, that no law shall be passed which in any way abridges freedom of speech or freedom of the press. That's the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in the Bill of Rights, okay? Now, what does it actually mean? It means exactly what it says. It means the old white guys who wrote it were geniuses. Geniuses who understood that the day would come that we would have a new Britain emerging in the United States of America. The very tyranny that they overthrew when they broke away from the United Kingdom, our dear friends across the pond, the very freedoms that they granted the founders of this nation for eternity were the freedoms that had been denied by the United Kingdom, by the at that time England, all-powerful England. And so what they were saying was, no law shall be passed which infringes upon the right to freedom of speech or freedom of the press. I got to repeat to you many times until you finally understand that vile speech, offensive speech, loud speech is exactly the kinds of speech that the First Amendment was intended and written to protect. You don't need polite speech protected. Do you need a guy on NBC or ABC or CBS to be protected by a First Amendment? No, everyone understands that's polite speech. That's polite talk. That's politically correct talk. You need a First Amendment to protect loud, offensive, agitating speech. And that's the mark of a real democracy. And I realize that many liberals don't even know what the First Amendment means. They used to know what it meant. They used to champion the First Amendment. They were the ones out front fighting for free speech at Berkeley in the 60s. Where are they today? They've all become these hardened Stalinists, these internationalists who would like nothing better than to stop the speech of anyone that they disagree with. Chicago, Donna, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I listen to you every day. And I wanted to thank you for giving me a voice. That's very important. And I want you to know that I pray for you and your family.
Both things are important. And I want to say again that it's listeners like you that make me get up in the morning and come to work. So what else is on your mind?
Well, I am grateful for your show. And I also want you to know that you helped me get off antidepressants.
You want me to tell you how to get off antidepressants?
One comment you made specifically.
Let me say this. I'm not a medical doctor, and I would be a fool to know to answer this question on the radio. All I can say to you is that there are many nutritional supplements out there that in some cases could be beneficial, but I would rather not get into a medical condition right now. God bless you, and thanks for listening to the show. Let's go around the nation, around the world. Let's go to Denver, Colorado. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, a great speech, Michael. I would just like to suggest that you broadcast your speech in England. I'm reading Orwell's 1984 now, and everything that he has written is prophetic. It's like he looked 60 years into the future.
Everything that Gordon Brown has done could have come out of George Orwell's book. The thought police are ever present. They have garbage police who look in people's garbage. They have music police who go into stores. Did you read the article about a woman who was singing in a supermarket because she likes to sing, and they said that they're going to put her in prison unless she pays a royalty fee for singing the tunes in her grocery store?
No, you need to broadcast. The people of England need to hear this because they're living 1984 right now.
Well, apparently they like it. They haven't thrown him out yet, have they?
Well, you know, I don't know if they have as much power. We can't throw anybody out and look at the country that we are. So we're kind of in the same boat that they are in a way.
Yes, we're just a little less down the primrose path, so to speak, Joe. All right, Joe, thank you. The speech will be around for a long time. I'm going to edit it and I'm going to put it up on a video. I may use it in various places, but not for a long while. Right now, the document that I just gave you can be had only through the Banned in Britain book, Beating the Liberal Blacklist, which you cannot buy in bookstores. It's not available in stores. I haven't mentioned the book for sale for 3 days now because I made a decision not to sell the book anymore. Because, A, I don't like selling things, number one, and number two, I think that if you want to buy it, you're going to buy it. So I'm not going to mention it much anymore. But if you want the essence of the speech that I just gave, virtually the entire script can be found inside the book Banned in Britain, along with all of the legal letters that has put us in this situation and all of the fight that is going on. But, you know, I had a caller in the last hour that was 100% right. He said, you're bearing the cross too hard. And the man heard it in my voice. He hears where I'm coming from. He knows. He can hear it. He can feel it. And truthfully, he's right. And there's only so much a man is willing to take or should take. And you may say, well, your enemies are getting to you. Yeah, well, they are getting to me. What do you want me to say? They're not. They are getting to me. But I haven't quit yet, and I'm not going to quit tomorrow. But I will tell you that I need your help. And what is that help? That help is listening to this show and doing something that costs you nothing, which is going to the website, michaelsavage.com, and signing the Savage Petition to Defend Free Speech. I think we're at about 50,000 people have had the guts to sign it. At a certain point, I'm going to send it to the few congressmen and senators who I think still represent freedom, and we're going to ask for Congress to write a letter demanding that my name be taken off that list. I'll be right back.
Savage.
On other subjects, Geert Wilders has a victory, and there's a new article out that says a British court has reversed the decision of the Home Office to ban controversial Dutch libertarian politician and filmmaker Geert Wilders from entry into Great Britain. Wilders was on the notorious list of undesirables issued by former Home Secretary Jackie Smith, who was also included host Michael Savage and more than a dozen radical Muslim leaders. The point is that Wilders has been taken off the list. Why? He hired Arfan Khan, a British Muslim lawyer, and spent about $16,000 on legal fees and ultimately won an appeal against the Home Office ruling from the Asylum and Immigration Tribunal. Well, I have spent a lot more than $16,000, and I have not won so much as a foothold yet with the Gordon Brown government. So maybe we'll look into Arfan Khan. He says in the article, American talker Michael Savage may benefit from this decision in his outstanding suit against former blah, 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 blah. Well, that's very interesting. That's an interesting article. California math scores among nation's worst. Well, I guess they're talking about the California legislature, because they certainly can't do their math. The fact is, as they say, that 30% of fourth graders and 23% of eighth graders in California tested proficient math tests on math tests from the National Assessment of Education and Progress. Only students in Mississippi, Alabama, and Washington, D.C. had lower scores on the tests, commonly referred to as the nation's report card. Now, when I moved to California, one of the reasons I did so in the early 70s was because it had the greatest educational system in the country. Look what has happened as a result of unfettered, uncontrolled illegal immigration. There's no other explanation for this. We always had poor in the state, but the poor were taught to keep up with the unpoor. And the fact of the matter is I came from an immigrant family, and I was told in no uncertain terms as a child, it was either sink or swim. My father said to me, you have one shot at getting out of this life that I have, and that's through education. You're not going to do it any other way. And they drilled me and they grilled me. That's the way it was. The parents are as much responsible as anybody else. But take a look at today. California math scores among nation's worst. Who do you blame for this? You blame the governor. You blame the legislature. You blame the federal government. The fact of the matter is because they have English as a second language. They have every pandering kind of study imaginable, a class of imaginable, and the kids can't read, they can't write, and they can't add. What else do you expect? Chicago, Julie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage?
Yes.
I agree with you wholeheartedly that you cannot do this alone. And you said something earlier in the program that the people are at a breaking point. Can you help me to better understand why more Americans who are at a breaking point won't go out and exercise their freedom of speech by protesting or marching? Masses.
Well, let's start with the fact that I think it's a miracle that we had so many teabaggers and town hallers that shocked the drugged Congress into out of their stupors. You know, they acted like drug addicts, the members of Congress who called them fascists and this and that. They were stunned that the actual people came out. Normally they go to these things and they talk and they go home. Their handlers say, good job, you did a great job, John. They don't care. They never cared. And all of a sudden, they're facing angry masses of people who are saying, stop printing money. They've never seen anything like it. In that sense, I'm amazed that we have so many people reacting.
Well, when they aggravate, I was one of the people who marched in Washington, and I know there's another march coming up in Millennium Park this Saturday, October 17th.
Good.
And I was just wondering why you've got the doctors and the nurses, who I've talked to a lot of them, are against this. Why are they and the veterans and everybody not?
Well, because the doctors and nurses who are against this are generally the better doctors and nurses who are not on the government dole. The doctors and nurses who appeared with Obama, half of them were not doctors and nurses. They were given fake white coats. Do you know that? It was all staged by the White House press office.
Yeah, I did know that.
You're watching overt Chavez-like propaganda coming out of the White House. They control virtually every network in this country.
I know.
I'm going to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. It's all I can do for you today. Okay? Thank you. New York City. John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I just want to say that I'm going to do my part, and I'm sure I'm speaking for all the rest of your callers, that they will never silence you, my friend. If I have to get a second job and put that money in a special fund to keep you
on
the air.
No, I don't want your money. Look, John, I want to say this to everyone listening to this show. I don't want your money, particularly if you're struggling right now. Do not send me any money. What you should do is, if you want to do something, is sign the petition. It's free. Speak out about Obama and what he's doing in the supermarket. You can do it, I told you, at a checkout line. You can say it nicely. You don't have to yell. You could say it to a clerk. You could say it with a smile. You could say, you know, I voted for that Obama, but he turned out to be a liar. I'm really disappointed in him. You'll see people look like, oh, my, you're not polite. Well, good. That's your job as an American. Don't be polite, John. John, I'm sending you a free present. Don't send me something. I'm going to send you something. I'm sending you a value, a well over $20 value. It's a free copy of Banned in Britain, John. Don't send me any money. I don't want it. Use it for yourself, okay? That's all there is to it. I'm not here to hawk anything. I'm not here to hawk anything. I'm here to give, not get. Roxy in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. Thank you so profusely for your speech, Dr. Savage. And I want you to know I've been listening to your station. I couldn't believe there was someone else that had my viewpoint that I've been so condemned for having. And I really want to say that I believe we should pay this forward to all Americans, all the listeners that we have here. We should get your tape, your video, make it available to us so that we can pay it forward to as many Americans as we possibly can.
I hear you. I'm going to try and get it edited and all of that in the next few days. But, Roxy, if you want to see the speech in its larger format, it's in Banned in Britain. Okay? And I thank you for finding Michael Savage and calling this program. Well, we have big problems in this country, and if you think that they're over, you're mistaken. What Obama is about to do will send shockwaves through everybody listening to this show. If you think health care reform, meaning socialized medicine, is the end of the road, you're mistaken. It's the first step along the road to a Chavez-like nation. Why do I say it? Look at the man's agenda. After this, he wants to pass amnesty for 30 million illegal aliens. Why was he wanting to do that? Because if they pass amnesty for 30 million illegal aliens, they won't have to fake their votes anymore. They won't have to go around the law. They will become the law, and you will be permanently disenfranchised from your own nation. You will become a second-class citizen in your own country. The people who work for a living in this country will be forced for the rest of their lives to pay higher and higher taxes, to have less and less freedom. Because the illegal aliens, remember, come from a socialist country. Most of them come from Mexico or another Central American nation. They don't have any freedom in those countries. And moreover, when they don't speak the language, which is another reason that the liberals have so emphasized English as a second language, that wasn't around when my father came here. It was sink or swim. Either you learned English or you didn't go to school. You took a job, and that was the end of it. Why do they want immigrants to not learn English? So that they can continue to lie to them with sound bites and pull the wool over their eyes and use them to vote in bigger and bigger government projects and to further erode whatever freedoms we may have left. Again, this is one man's opinion. I am not a politician. I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I am an individual. It is one man's opinion. I am Michael Savage.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I was on a boat for a day. I didn't know where I was. I mean, I looked at the water, and it was so beautiful, it was beyond belief. Well, truthfully, I could see why most people don't care about politics. There's another world out there. I got to tell you one little side note, then I'll go back to Obama bashing, if you don't mind, because he bashed himself. So I'm on the water. I didn't know where Obama was. For 2 days, I forgot everything that was unimportant in the world, and I got back to the eternal things that most human beings know about. I was with family. We're coming into Newport Harbor at dusk. It was astounding. I had forgotten how beautiful Southern California is, in fact. I got to tell you something. As long as I've lived in the San Francisco area, I've kind of loved the area. The people are from hunger. I can give you a thousand reasons why. It's the coldest place in America, spiritually, a death zone, a black hole, a nightmare, ghouls, a nightmare, the Northern California area. Everyone stabs everybody in the back while smiling to your face, by and large. Now, I'm not saying the world's any different anywhere else, but at least the weather is better. I come into Newport Harbor. It's like one of those soft nights. Now, here's the interesting part. I saw dozens of boats going out, on sailboats with young people on it, people in their 20s, 30s, partying. Partying like there was no recession. The sailboats are going out. They weren't all big yachts. Yay! Having a good time. And you know what? I enjoyed every minute of it. I said, you know, these people have the right idea. I look off to the left. I see the jetty. I see the sun falling over the jetty out to the west. I see people on surfboards. Again, you think they give a damn about Obama and the Olympics and Afghanistan and Iran? They don't care. And for those few hours that I saw all of that and felt all of that, I was a human being again. Play music for me now. I feel I'm spacing out. Give me some rock. That's nice. What is this? Oh, the Sea of Love.
The sea of
who?
Love.
Who's Bill Phillips? Who's Bill Phillips? Who was the girl actor, the woman actress in this movie with Al Pacino? She was still good looking when they did the movie. Ellen Barkin, whatever happened to her? I often think about, she's still operating somewhere? She's trying to nail another Madoff-like guy, like a,
I love you.
She always marries like, perfume magnates or whatever. All right, turn it off. Headache already. Migraine. I got to tell you what happened. I'm going to back off into a personal now. Forgive me my personal indulgences every once in a while. You're not going to believe this. Remember I was complaining about ears, humming in my ears for a couple of days. Really, it was like I was inside a swimming pool. You know, like that. Like something over your ears. Okay, I had that for days. So I go to an ear doctor, and he looks in my ears, and he takes the opportunity to clean my ears, which was disgusting. I didn't ask him to clean them. I just look at him to see what's in there. He says, well, while I'm in there, and he pulled out wax that looked like I'm sorry to bore you. It looked like the size of a small fly. So I said, that's what caused the humming? He said, no, but I couldn't see beyond it. Now that I can, there's nothing wrong with you. So I said, okay, great. All right, so you go home. I relaxed on a four-day weekend. I took time off from radio. And it went away. It truly did. It was all tension. It was nerves, right? Something happened inside me. Nerves do get to you with what I've been through from the lib attacks. Wait a minute. I swear as God is my witness, you should be struck dead by lightning if I'm lying, as they used to say in Brooklyn, even though I'm from the Bronx. You should be struck dead by lightning, not me if I'm lying. But anyway, it's an old bad joke. I swear at 10:30, 11 o'clock, it was a sort of like hot night out here in California. I go out to walk the dog, and there were like moths. It was so hot, like moths were flying out of the shrubbery next to the front door. It was like eerie. And one of them, I bend down to put the leash on the dog. A moth flies in my left ear. I swear to God. There's a moth, like, did you ever get a moth in here and try to get it out and it won't come out? And you grab it and you can't grab nothing? Nothing, can't grab anything. And it's flapping its damn wings, and I'm freaking that it's going to burrow into my brain, I swear to God. And I'm digging and nothing's coming. I'm saying, God, why are you doing this to me? What's the message? Why is there a moth in my ear? I swear to God. And I'm digging and pulling, and I say, I got it, nothing. And it's still flipping. Flapping these big wings inside my ear, and I'm freaking it's going to go in. Oh, God, gone, and I don't see. I'm pulling and yanking, and I'm throwing on the ground, and I look, and there's nothing on the ground. So I got a freak show. I get the cell phone number of the ear doctor, and I call him. And he was nice enough to take the call. I told him what happened. I said, I don't see the moth parts on the ground, but it's not flapping in my ear anymore. I said, could it get in my head and penetrate my brain? He said, no, it can't. Well, I got to tell you the truth. I mean, I put a Q-tip in there. There was a teeny bit of blood. I'm not trying to, like, gross you out here. So wait a minute. Now I put the whole thing aside, and I said, you know what? God's speaking to me. I'm a highly educated man, but, and there's a big but, I'm extremely mystically oriented about events. I still have, like, a primitive part of me that is a mystical streak, like dream interpretation. I guess that's from the hippie days, the searching for the plants, living in the Fiji Islands, drinking Yangona until all hours of the night, and you know, Amdo, and drinking with the Fijians and sitting on floor mats and seeing spirits and talking to spirit healers. But I didn't get it from that. I had it earlier than that. I had the spirit thing back in Harlem when I went to all black Abyssinian churches, and I was the only white guy because I used to like to get into the spirit of the thing, and I felt the spirit more there than I did in the Episcopal church or the synagogue. So what can I tell you? There's always been something spirits. So therefore, I said to myself after the moth experience in the ear, what is God telling me? Why is God doing this to me? What is the meaning of a losing my hearing like in a drum last week, and this week a moth flying? And it's like one in a billion that this would happen to me. How could a moth get in my ear, and why? God's telling me something. Now, I know what it is. I have very, very strong suspicion about what it is, but I can't tell you. So I'll be right back.
Savage.
Good last night. I don't know about you. Nightmares like every other night. I actually look forward to them. People, I don't go to horror movies because I have every night is a horror movie for me. No, I look forward to sleeping because it's incredibly interesting. Wish there were like electrodes and wires I could attach to like a camcorder that would record what I dream. I wouldn't ever have to like get up in the morning. I mean, I could just run it all day. Just broadcast it on my website. I've had zillions of listeners for that one. I forgot what last night's dream was. I don't remember it all. Just the moth in the ear freaked me out. I slept like a baby. I don't know. I don't understand it. I'm very resilient. I get knocked down. I get depressed. Then I get up again, and I'm stronger because it's the beautiful part about being an immigrant son. Whatever happens to you in this country, in this life, is nothing compared to what went on in your ancestors' times in Europe. Nothing. This is nothing. You know, it's really nothing. I mean, you add up the whole picture of your life. Earwax, this I got to take. I knew it. 1-800-449-8. I can't believe it. Sacramento, KSTE Country. Lance, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, this is the moth in your ear speaking. Now, how soon will Steven Spielberg move to Cuba to enjoy Fidel's healthcare paradise?
There you go.
I'm not yet ready to win love Fidel's revolution.
Oh, he's probably going to do the Lenny Riefenstahl of Fidel.
There was a World War II pilot, but my father was only a co-pilot seated to the pilot's right.
How could a boy whose father was a pilot in World War II, how could he wind up being such a commie? No answer. All right. I should have given out a free book. I forgot I'm giving them out. Medford, Oregon. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
It is an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. That is so nice to hear. That made me feel good today. What's on your mind?
Part of the reason why you have earwax is to keep bugs out.
I know. And when he pulled it out, I said, wait, doctor, before you pull it out, all my life I've been told don't remove the earwax. It's a protectant. You know what he said to me? He said you need a thin film of wax, not a plug. Is that true?
Well, that's what I remember from high school biology.
Well, he's the ear expert, so I didn't argue with him. I don't like it because I told him, here's the thing is, this is gory. I just got to get it over with. When I was 5 years old, again, it goes back to my fear of doctors and my distrust of the medical establishment. My mother, God rest her soul, made a few errors. One of them was she took me to a quack there, Dr. K, I can't mention his name because his family could sue me yet. One of them could be a lawyer. They went in for some reason or other. And, you know, he's looking in my ear. All of a sudden, I was little. She was big. She held me down. Get him now, she said. Get him now. He's squirming. Get him now. And while I'm down, they had a tube in my ear with water squirted in and stuff came out. And I said, what did they do that to me for? I never trusted my mother or a doctor ever since. Now, what they did was they took the earwax out. I was told years later they never should have done that. You got to leave the earwax in. Why? What do you remove the wax for?
Well, like I said, you know, from high school biology, I remember that.
Right. I said earwax the same thing. So here it is. A week later, a bug goes for it. All right, let me send you a free copy of what? Band and earwax?
Well, are you writing on that yet?
No, I have not written band and earwax yet. if you can name the book, you'll get a free copy.
Banned in England.
That's right. Banned in Britain. You get a free copy. Stay in the line. God forbid, you almost said banned in Ireland. Oh, I'm not banned in Ireland. I'm going to Ireland, I think. I feel like, you know, in the Midnight Cowboy, it's like going to Florida. Like, remember, you wanted to go to Florida, the land of sunshine and orange juice. The moth in the ear scares me a little bit. I'll tell you why. Because I don't know if I got it out. I don't feel anything. But I have a Stephen King nightmare now. Like, the moth is in there. It's laying eggs. Larvae are going to grow, and they're going to come out of my ears and eyes and your nose, like, in months to come. Nah, come on. I mean, this is Paranoiaville. Barbara, Wisconsin, welcome to the program.
Hi. I want to tell you about my husband's story with a moth. One flew in his ear one night, and so I called the emergency in our area, and they told me to have my husband go in a dark room, put a flashlight in the ear, and the moth came right flying out of his ear.
Oh, my God. So I, like a fool, went right to sleep in a dark bed. It probably probably burrowed into my ear.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's an A. So the moth, yeah, but I probably killed it, I would think, because I was digging while it was flipping.
Was doing that too, and he said he could feel it inside his head.
Oh, stop! Don't! This could turn into something nightmarish. Now I have to see the ear guy. Just what I needed. Again, all right. Thanks for the call, God. Elliot, thanks for the call. What's on your mind,
Mike? I would love to hear more of the historical lessons you have to offer.
To our minds in this country, from the invasion of the pornographers, the invasion of the mind screwers in the schools is worse than the barbarian invasions of the 4th and 5th centuries in China.
I mean, I don't have a frame of reference for that. I need more
education. I know. It's a little big sweep of history. But you got to understand that China was, early on, I'm going to talk about China in another period. China was invaded by barbarians in the 4th and 5th centuries, and what happened was their prosperity and social stability and civilization, which was far ahead of contemporary Europe, collapsed. It was only because of the invasions that their civilization collapsed. Does that sound like America today in a certain way, Elliot?
It's getting there.
Yeah, I don't mean it's collapsed, but wouldn't you say that our level of prosperity, social stability, and civilization is less today than it was 20 years ago? Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and if you were to follow the arc of this civilization from the terms of social stability and prosperity, on the arc that it is on, particularly if you look at what's happened to the media and how demented it is, you have to say in 20 years what's going to be left. You have to ask yourself. We need a Tang, like a leader called Tang, who ushered in one of the great ages of Chinese history. Because Tang brought back the prosperity and social stability and civilization that was China before. And it was only another wave of invasion from Inner Asia, this time the Mongols, that brought this era of well-being to a halt again. And the fact of the matter is, another dynasty came along hundreds of years later, called the Ming Dynasty, that reversed these setbacks and put China back on the course charted by its Tang predecessor. So what am I getting at? I'm getting at the fact that countries, like people, like individuals, ebb and flow. This country is now going through a downturn. It's been going through a downturn for a very long time. Many people would say the downturn started sometime in the late 1950s with the advent of the communism and the perversion ushered in by the triumvirate of Allen Ginsberg, Timothy Leary, and that lawyer I mentioned. Remember I mentioned the triumvirate of three people who ruined America? If you had to name three people who brought about this collapse, the societal collapse and social stability, it would be Allen Ginsberg on the cultural level, Timothy Leary on the mind level for introducing lysergic acid diethylamide to the masses, convincing whole waves of young people that getting stoned was the answer, you know, turn on, tune in, drop out. And then there was a third one, the one who did the Freedom Rider bus thing. He was a straight lawyer from New York, and he got the nookie on the bus and the patchouli oil. He never became the same. He left his wife for all of the free love girls. I forget his name. He went over the River Hades with the other two. But it was those three who put this downturn in action. I mean, I can name four or five more. It was Supreme Court decision by the great pornographer. I forget his name already. What was it, the penthouse guy? I don't remember his name. Larry Flint. He was the one who brought pornography to every neighborhood with, again, a fork-tongued lawyer who said that it should be up to community standards. And you know, speaking about community standards, look what happened as a result. There is porno in every household, in every corner, in every hotel room because of Larry Flint's community standards. That's exactly what the FCC wants to do now. They want to introduce the equivalent of political pornography into your head. They want to take a guy like Michael Savage off the air who's super literate, super passionate, and super conservative, and they want to replace it with so-called diversity, which means pornography. That's what they're doing. When I say pornography, I don't mean X-rated pornography. I mean political pornography. Political pornography in the form of day and night propaganda about the greatness of the great one. Okay, moving on. Why am I working? Why do I care about politics? Why do I care about politics? Well, the reason is because everything I've worked for will be taken away from me if I don't. If I let these left-wing socialist bums do what they wanted to do, there'd be no boats except patrol boats hunting down people with money who are not fishing by hand. You know, now you get the picture. They're communists from the get-go. Think of Fidel and Raul Castro. That's who's running America, okay, in one way or another, on a minor key. Admittedly, not right away. You know, it's not hasta la victoria siempre quite yet, but close. We're close there. What's going to bring them down to earth and put them on a track of being, let's say, even mainstream Democrats? I don't know. I told you I had a dream 2 weeks ago about it. Even I was appealing to Biden. I told you. Biden would be a better president than Obama, in my opinion. Why? Because Obama's been around the block. Obama knows how the country works. I mean, so Biden knows how the country works. Obama doesn't. Biden was never a professor. Biden, I don't think, ever had things handed to him. Biden is like a kind of a down-to-earth guy who's a Democrat machine politician. I don't question his loyalty to America as I do Obama. How do you like that? How do you like that? I am saying Biden would make a more stable president. I would trust the man more with foreign affairs than with this college guy. Now, we'll take your calls on the Savage Nation. Miami, Florida. Gloria, go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I'm so glad I can talk to you. I came from Cuba back in 1962 when I was 19, and I can tell you that's the most devastating regime to be under. And if you want to ruin the health care, go ahead. We will lose our freedom. We will lose our ability to make choices, and it's horrible. I am very emotional about this situation. I'm very hurt.
Don't even have clean sheets in the Cuban hospitals unless their relatives send them from Miami. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the worst thing is that you lose your ability to have freedom of thought, freedom of opinion, freedom of everything. It's horrible.
Well, that's what Obama and his friends want, is no freedom of speech and no freedom of thought. You know I'm right now banned from speaking in England. You know that, don't you?
No, I listen to you every
Can you believe that I, an American broadcaster, am not free to go to England and speak? Let me in that country, and they let murderers and terrorists into their country? That's what the West is becoming under these left-wingers. Go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition, will you please?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life.
There's another song on that album that they played quite a bit, Blackbird. And there's a verse in the song Blackbird about blackbirds fixing their wings, rising up and flying. So Manson told his family that by Blackbird, come on, we know what the Beatles are talking about. They're talking about the black man. And they're telling the black man to rise up against the white man.
Terrible, terrible thing. So here we are, 1969 to 2009. Goes back actually to 1809. Some would say it goes back to 1409. Others would say it goes back to 09. And some would say it goes back beyond even that. What it is a class struggle. It's a struggle between those who have and those who have not. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with have and have-nots. And since we are living east of Eden in the land of Nor, where there is no Eden and there is no place, we have to live with what we have and we have to have with what we live. And since we have now in the White House and around him some people who have never before been seen in such high places in America, we have to live with it, and we're trying to live with it. And so the people go out and they protest, and they're called racist. They're called every name under the sun by Nancy Pelosi, by Harry Reid, and the other illegitimate, the people who don't belong in office at all, are telling the people they don't even belong to have the vote. They have no right to have the vote because they're actually doing what Obama says people should do, which is organize. Think about it. The people in the Tea Parties, the people who went out in the town hall meetings were actually community organized community. So everything that Obama says you should do, they did, only they didn't agree with him. Therefore, they were fascist, Nazis, un-American, thugs. Everything that the American people aren't, he said they are. Therefore, the government is the illegitimate, not the people. Now, you say it's anti-government, you're wrong. It's anti-illegitimate government. And I'll be darned before I stop telling you what I think is going on. I believe we've had a communist revolution in this country, and I believe it's a slow communist revolution, only you don't even know it. I know that the word socialist is being laughed at. When I first started using it years ago, no one even knew what a socialist was. 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago when I started using it, what's that? What are you talking about? Now everyone, socialist, so good. But you don't know is there's 30, 40 varieties of socialist. What's the big deal? He's a socialist. What's he hiding it for? The only question is what variety of socialist is Obama? Is it on the mild side? Is it on the British side? Is it on the middle side? Is it on the far side? Is it on the other side? What side is it? Is it on the side of Joseph Stalin? Is it on the side of Adolf Hitler, socialist from Germany? Or is it the side of Joseph Stalin, socialist from Russia? Is it on the side of Pol Pot, the socialist from Cambodia? Or is it a mild sort of state socialism? Slightly higher taxes, more government interference, more government-run things, but the people are basically left alone. What side is it? Is it Chavez closing down radio stations, imprisoning people, taking property that isn't theirs? Is it Mugabe style? We don't know, because he doesn't know, because he's only a figurehead. He has no idea where this snowball could end. See, the avalanche has started. We don't know where the avalanche ends. That's the whole point. You don't understand it. There's been an avalanche in America. Only you don't know where it ends. You don't know how big an avalanche it is. The question is, who set off the dynamite? Well, you have to look at the currency, because he who controls the currency controls the people. Now, who controls the currency? Well, you have to look at the currency traders of the world. You have to look at the man who almost broke the Bank of England. You have to look at the man who almost broke the Malaysian currency. You have to look at the man who was no doubt trading in U.S. dollars to run the dollar into the toilet by betting against it while claiming to be for it, while putting an imposter in order to make sure that the people have no voice in the government. You got to look at the money trader. You got to look at the money changer in the temple, and you'll find out that if you actually look at the handprints on it, you'll see it goes all the way back to the very same evil genius who almost broke the British pound, in the humble opinion of the man who sits with a microphone and an undershirt on the second floor, watching the world go by underneath his feet. And that's the whole story. It's a talk show host, one man looking at the world, one man's opinion of no power, no importance, not heard from by ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, or Fox. Therefore, he doesn't exist, but he has an audience of millions. No one knows how. How could it be that he has an audience of millions that so fanatically listen to his every word, hang on his every word, want to hear every word, can't wait to hear every word, get up in the morning hoping he's on that day, don't want fill-ins, don't want replays. Where's the man? Where is he? Why doesn't he talk? How come he can't do it every day, all day? Why do I listen to him? What's wrong with me? He's right. I know he's right. When I first heard him, I hated him. I thought he was an extremist. Now I realize I was crazy. He was right. Now I realize the danger we're in. Hey, man, where can I buy a band in Britain? I don't know. It's nowhere in a bookstore. Why not? How come they publish books by unknown doofus so-called conservatives and you can't find Michael Savage's books in a bookstore? I don't know. Is it some kind of conspiracy that New York publishers are in business to make money, won't touch a New York Times best-selling author? How come he's never on television? How come? All aboard, Khmer Rouge, here we come. Beware the government media complex. You have Oderman on MSNBC. You have Oderman and Softball, and on the other side of the coin, you have Leprechaun and Wallbanger. They all allegedly hate each other, but in fact, if you flip the coin, it's either side. What do you want? Throw it around four sides to the coin, because it's all one media complex. It's sort of a Rubik's Cube. The Rubik's Cube has four heads on it. Not as many heads as you would think, but there's four heads, and you think liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat. No, my friend, Moloch owns them all. Watch out for the government media complex, because you think that the Leprechaun and the Wallbanger oppose Oderman and Softball. What you don't know is they're all flipped by the man, the peasant Avante, who controls the dice. The man who controls the dice is the man who controls the TV, the radio, the newspapers, the magazines.
Savage.
Well, like the other Russian oligarchs, Roman Abramovich made most of his billions when Russia handed out the commodity goodies. He got the oil, he got the aluminum, he got the plastic toys, and he got other businesses. Now, the question is how. That's not my business. It's your business. You figure it out. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. No inside information on it. All I know is he has nice toys, nice houses, cars, boats, planes, wives, girlfriends, shoes. Whatever. But as a rich man told me when I was a young kid, I told you the story before, pardon me, indulge me. This is for the younger people. It's not for anyone over 30. When I was 15 or 16, I told you one friend had a father who was like the tough father, club owner. Who would ever think that in that circle of guys there was a club owner? He was a club owner, a pugilist, a street fighter, a really tough guy, but everyone loved him because he was a quiet John Wayne type. Never spoke loudly. He had a pair of fists on him like hams. But he was very gentle. Like all tough men, he was a gentleman, you know. And in the truest sense. But he was the guy that the kids gravitated to. So when you're 13, 12, you want to know what it's like to be a man, what do? So he'd sit us down on Sundays. We'd go out to the house. We'd eat in the house, usually spaghetti and meatballs, whatever. And, you know, play around ping pong, get in trouble in the neighborhood, whatever. Shoot out Christmas tree lights with BB guns through the basement window. I remember once the best fun I ever had in the winter, shooting and sticking the BB gun out. Some today you'd be arrested probably putting Sing Sing for shooting out a Christmas light. On the trees, the little lights, no one was hurt. It's innocent stuff. Kids do these things. Tom Sawyer, remember? Mark Twain. Today Mark Twain would be arrested as a childophobe or something, or inciting violence amongst children. He wouldn't be allowed into Britain. So he would sit down and he would say to us, look, the important thing to remember about money is that the first million is the hardest. Now, that's when a million really meant something. Today, that would have very little meaning. Everyone's a millionaire. He said, the first million is the hardest. Well, I couldn't even understand what that meant. That's in an age when the minimum wage was like a buck. So you say, when the first million is the hardest, the first million, that's a lot of money. I mean, a million? The first million is the hardest. I didn't even know what that meant. But now I know what it means. He's absolutely right. The first million is the hardest. That's what he said. And then he also said that the richest men he knows, the richest men that he knew, none of them were really rich, were all men who had lost everything several times and bounced back. And he said, guys, remember what I'm telling you, bounce back, is that you have to learn how to take the falls and come back off the mat. That was number two. And I think most importantly, he said, remember, the amount of money you have isn't important because you can only wear one suit and eat one meal at a time. Now you say, well, that's common sense today. Is that common sense today in a consumer-driven society where you're told to, you know, I don't know, own more than you can use, whatever. So you think, you can only wear one suit at a time and only eat one meal at a time. I thought that was very interesting, those words. And I used them for many, many years in my life when I didn't have much financial fortune to keep me going because there's no shame in being poor. I got to tell you something. I know some very poor people. They're very nice people. I know some poor people who are very bad people and vice versa. The poor or rich has nothing to do with a person's personality. I got to tell you that. It runs across the spectrum. But this poor guy once said to me, he said, show me in the Bible anywhere it says, thou shalt be rich. There's no requirement you should be rich. It's not a requirement that you walk around with these things in order to be a good man. If you have them and you're still a good person, good. All the more power to you. But I remember when he said that. He said there's nothing in the Bible. Nothing in the Bible says that you have to be a rich man to be loved by God. I thought that was very interesting. Here's a guy who told me this. I don't keep in touch with him. He wasn't a particularly great guy, but he was a smart man. He had a little room in a single-room occupancy building in San Francisco. And he and I were friends for a while. And one of my most pleasant moments in my life was him cooking a sausage for me on a frying pan and a two-burner like hot plate in his room as we looked down on the streets and talked about the world. Can you imagine that? So where do you take your pleasure from? Is it the big five-star hotel? Sometimes that could be great. Me, I'd prefer sitting in a room like that sometimes, having a good conversation with a sausage. Not all the time anymore. I mean, I'm not into that. That level of my life is over. That I don't do that anymore. It's not that I don't want to. I'm just not in that headspace. So here we are. That's it. And it's neither here nor there. I'm just chatting. It's a talk show. And remember what the word conversation means, boys and girls. It's a lost art. Conversation with verse. With verse, conversation. The object is to keep the conversation moving. And I try to speak with you, my audience of millions, as though we are in a room together and we're friendly, we're having a conversation. The object of a conversation is not to defeat the other guy and render him silent. The object of a conversation, as I learned, is to converse, to share verse with each other. So if you'd like to share verse with Michael Savage, it's easy to do. Not now it isn't, but the phone number, and you know it already, it's jammed the lines. Because every time I get softer and more reasonable, the lines go hot because people are, you know, they're not as intimidated to call the Savage Nation. You know what I'm saying? That's all. That's it. That's the whole story. I don't have to burn up the airwaves in order to have you listen. The audience is there. It goes up and down every day like everything on earth. There's nothing constant. Life is what it is. Que sera, sera. Whatever comes my way, I'll ride it. I told you that years ago. If I have a donkey, I can ride a donkey. If I have a chauffeured limo, I can get in the back of the chauffeured limo and do the telephone just as well as the next guy. I've had both. Now, we'll take your calls on the Savage Nation. Tennessee, Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, one of the things I enjoy very much about your program is when you talk about your boyhood in New York. I'm a 70-year-old Italian-American born in Brooklyn, with a smattering of Jewish relatives, and it really brings back good memories when you speak
so
about
it. So what in the world are you doing in Tennessee? Witness protection or what?
That's basically it. That's what I tell the people when they ask me.
No, with your accent, Tennessee, I mean, you know you can't get any food.
No. Italian food is really non-existent down here. Most ethnic foods really are non-existent down here.
What do you have to go to Olive Garden for Italian food?
Well, you know what? That happens.
I can imagine a guy like you going into Olive Garden and saying, I want I can't even remember the name of it anymore. Some of the rare dishes, let's say, whatever. But, Frank, you like more, let's say, stories from psychological nudity. Did you ever get a copy of the book, Frank?
No, I haven't, Mike, to tell you the truth.
I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Is that your wife in the background hectoring you?
Yes, she is. She would really feel honored to say hello to you.
What's her name? I want to hear her name.
Her name is Jean.
And you guys came down there together on witness protection, or you met her down there?
No, we both were in the casino industry, so we both came down here on the witness protection program.
Well, it must feel like it, even if it's not true, Frank.
Yep. I have a son out in Reno, Nevada, who's also in the gaming industry, and he's a big fan of yours, listens every night.
All realists are. Any realist in America loves this show. Even if they don't agree with me politically on some of the points, they love the show because they know it sounds like their relatives talking to them.
Well, it is. And the enjoyable part about your show, it's not all, Republicans dead.
That's right. So let's see. Of all the stories, which do you like best? Tippy dies and is thrown in a garbage truck, Fat Pack. I bet you like Fat Alan the Tuna makes the tuna.
You had a fellow on from New York one night. He just kept on telling stories, and you related to him very, very well. I can't.
Oh, Fat Al's tuna, but I remember that. Well, look, here's the fantasy I have, Frank. My thought is that in a couple of years, when Obama creates the internment camps for conservatives, I get a choice. They're going to say to me, "Look, Savage, we don't want to put all of you away. The hacks don't have to go because they'll switch coats as fast as I can say Barack Obama. It won't be a problem with the corned beef guy. It won't be a problem with the golfer. They'll become diehard government supporters. But with you, Savage, you don't even have to do that. We'll let you stay on the air as long as you only tell stories from New York. That's my fantasy, Frank. You think it'll happen?
I'll tell you, I wouldn't mind it. I'd still be a big fan.
Yeah, let me tell you something. It's a fantasy because these people are not nice people, Frank. You know and I know what they're all about. Frank, stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Fat Al's Tuna, The Electric Blue, Saddle Stitch Pants, and 72 other stories from Psychological Nudity. When I'm walking around now in San Francisco, which I do rarely, they don't know who I am because I'm in radio. But the minute they see that Gucci hat and Teddy, they come up to me and say, "Are you Michael Savage?" I say, "No, but he's Teddy." And that's I get given away by the dog.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Theory of Marxism is that workers are alienated because they do not control their labor. And they make the products, and yet they don't profit from them. And so they say, well, we need to create labor unions, and the workers will assume political and economic power and take it away from the bourgeoisie. I've heard all of this crap in college, a long time ago. And this is something that only a professor could come up with. And the reason is that an entrepreneur is the individual, man or woman, obviously, of any race, who has the foresight and the guts to come up with a product or a service, borrow the money or earn the money, invest it in the business, take all the risk, and gain most of the rewards. And in so doing, create the jobs that the workers enjoy without the worry that the entrepreneur has to keep his company going. How come that's left out of Marxist dialectics? The answer is because most of it's written by college professors who we now have running America. Obama's a college teacher. The man never created a product or a service that anybody needed other than BS. Obama's number one product is BS. BS is what he sold all his life. Can you name one product or service that Obama has ever created? Can you name one company that Obama has ever created? That's why we need a capitalist for a president, not a college teacher who doesn't understand the first thing about meeting a payroll or what it takes to raise capital in order to invest in the company, what it takes to keep a company going, with regulations thousands of pages long, with lawyers coming at you from every direction, threatening to put you out of business if you're too successful. Again, by losers in government and losers in academia who say you're exploiting the worker. Look what they're doing now with radio. They take a dumb moron, put him in the FCC, a diversity chief, a real genius. The schmuck never did anything in his whole life except push the diversity lie that the only reason conservative radio survives and thrives is because of a warp by the corporations, he says. It's because ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and all the newspapers in America, with the rare exception of the Washington Times, are all radical left-wing rags. So the people who are largely conservative tune into conservative talk radio as their only voice of freedom. That's the reason. Now we have a Nazi czar in the FCC who says, no, that's not the reason. That with more diversity, more localized talent, we're going to have a better nation. It's right out of the communist playbook. You want to beat the system? If you want to work the system, then work the system over. In other words, don't do it through talent. Don't appeal to the audience through hard work, but appeal to the audience through constant rubbish put out by the liberal establishment. This is a theory of revolution right out of the Marxism going on in America today under Obama. Everywhere you turn, you see the critique of capitalism and the theory of revolution espoused by Karl Marx now being pushed forward by his minions at every level of government. So, by the way, I've renamed Teddy the Freedom Poodle. I have an 11-pound gray poodle. It's a strange thing. This weekend I went around San Francisco over by the ferry terminal. It's my new hangout now. I like to go there once in a while. I like the buzz of the market. It reminds me of my father's market, all of the different stores. The cheese store, the bread store, the meat store, the vegetable store. It's packed. And the tourists are happy, and there's a healthy buzz. I enjoy walking through the thing because they took a dismal, horrendous ferry terminal, and they turned it into some thriving capitalist bourgeoisie emporium, which I love. This is something you never would have seen in Eastern Europe, you know what I'm saying? Where would they have gotten the money to invest in this? From the evil capitalists? From the evil bankers? From the evil investment community? Schmucks? You ever go to Eastern Europe before the wall came down and capitalism came in? You ever take a look at what they had there? One rotten mortadella hanging from the wall with a line going around the block with fat, drab women? You know what I'm saying? They look like Stalin's housekeeper. How the women all of a sudden get so beautiful in the Ukraine from good food? Were they always like that? I can't understand it. Well, how come everyone discovered the Ukrainian beauty? They weren't like this 30 years ago? The Battle of Stalingrad, they weren't beautiful women with machine guns in those drab Russian uniforms? I mean, it's unbelievable to me. How they all get so beautiful all of a sudden? It can't all be surgery. So as I walk around with Teddy, people come up to me. Oh, are you Michael Savage? I said, yes. I said, how'd you recognize me? Through the dog. It's always Teddy. They put two and two together. They see the dog, they see the Gucci hat, and then they hear me, and then it's all put together. So I've renamed Teddy the Freedom Poodle. And I'm not going to repaint him red, white, and blue. He's going to remain Battleship Gray. I'm gonna leave Teddy Battleship Gray, honestly. Cutest little guy in the world. God, they get so close to you, it's frightening. But look, the way it is they have to die before you. Otherwise, someone explain it to me. Someone smarter than me. I kept saying, why does nature set it up that we love these little creatures so much, then they die, and you're left with a broken heart? The answer is that if you died before them, who would take care of them? So God makes their lifespan shorter than yours. Oh, and I meant to tell you this. That's what I was trying to tell you. You know, because of what I'm going through, the stress I'm under, because of the evildoers in Britain and the evildoers here in the American media, I've had some trouble, you know, sleeping and thrashing and bad dreams, and I've joked about it. But I live with it. It doesn't bother me. In other words, you live with what you have to live with. It's nothing compared to what happens to people. So the other night, I think it was Friday, and I decided what was going on. Remember I told you about a moth flew in my ear? I got very freaked out, and I said, what the hell? I never had anything like this happen. I realized what was going on here, and I don't want to be disrespectful to God, because I take that very seriously. I may joke around a lot, but there's one area I don't step over the line. You know what I'm saying? The big guy in the sky doesn't like you to mock him. He's not your friend. The guy up there is not your pal. I love these churches that say it's no longer worship, it's a celebration. That's it. It's finished. God doesn't want a celebration in church. He wants you on your hands and knees worshiping him. That's the setup. God wants you to worship him. Otherwise, don't even bother. You want a celebration? Then go to a folk dance. You want a celebration? Then go to a mosh pit. But you don't go into a church or synagogue for a celebration. That's liberal claptrap. You go in there to shake, and you go in there to beg God for forgiveness because you're no damn good. You're all no good. We're all no good. We're all fallen angels. And we're all bad every day of the week. And we all know we're bad. We all know we're bad. We know that we're bad. That's why we're human. The reason that we are bad is because the human being is bad. The liberal claptrap is that we're all good. We're all born perfect, and only the evil bourgeois society makes us bad. Yeah, right. Sure, that's how it works. So I couldn't sleep, as I said to you. So I got out my prayer book, and I said, oh, I'm not into it. I got to be into it. God talked to me with the moth. God said, okay, you're not listening. He said, you're not listening to me. So I tell you what, I'm going to put a moth in your ear, and you're not going to be able to get it out so easily. Then maybe you'll start hearing what I'm saying to you, is that you're not listening to me, God said. God speaks to me in many ways. God speaks to you in millions of ways. You don't even understand it. You think God's got to come into your living room? What, do you believe Jimmy Carter? He's got to come down in a white cape and sit on your couch while you're waving around a snake and drinking arsenic? Bill Moyers and Jimmy Carter may believe that, but that's not the way God talks to you. You don't have to swing a snake over your head and drink strychnine. You're not Bill Moyers or Jimmy Carter. You're not from that neck of the woods. God speaks to you in a million ways. I mean, I could play to you, every time I hear a newborn baby cry, remember that song? Or touch a leaf or see the sky, then I know why I believe. Remember that beautiful song? What do you think that was about? That was a worship. He sees God in a leaf. The songwriter, the singer, understands that. God speaks to you every day in every way. So in other words, if you don't understand that, you have to understand that. Every breath you take is a miracle. It's a miracle when you think about the human being. It's miraculous that you still breathe every day, that you get up every morning and one little vessel didn't close down. Jewish prayer book says first thing in the morning, thank you, God, for breathing life back into me this morning because of the myriad vessels in my body. Should even one of them be closed, I wouldn't be here. That's a miraculous concept written thousands of years ago before anatomy was understood. How was that written by the ancient Hebrews? That's why you have to understand the importance of religion and the importance of the Bible, whether you're religious or not. It's a consciousness that helps us understand the miraculous being of living. That's how I see it. So to get back to it, so I turned away from God over the last few months. I was getting very cynical. I was getting very stiff-necked. I was getting very strong-willed. I was moving away from God, starting into my cynicism again. I started to feel neglected and rejected because of what happened with Britain, and I felt all alone, and I started to turn from God, and God didn't like it. So things start to happen. So the moth in the ear, I start to say, okay, I'm sorry, I'll listen. So he says, okay, that's not enough. Listening isn't enough. Now start to worship again. Now start to pray. Prayer is a begging. Do you understand that prayer is begging? And when you're arrogant, you can't pray. Do you understand why Western man has trouble praying? And why the Muslim will defeat you at the end of the day unless you start worshiping God again? I don't think you understand what I just said to you. It was so fast. It was like a silver bullet that just went across the nation. Unless you understand what the faithful Muslim understands, they're going to win and you're going to lose. And that is because God wants you to worship him. Now, monotheism was begun by the Jews, make no mistake about it. The Jewish religion was the first monotheistic religion. Then came Christianity and then came Islam. Doesn't matter who started it. What you got to understand is the same God. One God, different ways to approach that God. And what I'm saying to you is, God is not your friend. It is a vengeful God that we have. I didn't say mean, I said vengeful. You cross him, he's going to cross you 1,000 different ways. You worship him, he might let you breathe another day. So what I'm saying to you is, start with the understanding that you are not God. Start with the understanding that you begin as dust and you end as dust. Start with the understanding that you come from a foul seed and you end as dust. Once you understand that and become humble again, and I don't mean humble to the next man. See, that's another thing that's misunderstood. You could be the most devoutly religious person who worships God and humble to God, and you could be an arrogant SOB to man because they deserve it. They need it because most men are not your friends. They're out to get you. I'll be back.
Savage.
Stay in the light. Stay in the light. I,
Savage Nation. Blasting across 370-some-odd stations from coast to coast. Staying alive. Staying alive. Staying alive. Staying alive. That's all that matters, by the way, is staying alive. Now, as Einstein said in his last days, just staying alive really didn't matter. He said the whole purpose of life is to have a purpose, and without a purpose, there's no reason to keeping your body alive. So here I am with a purpose and staying alive. Play it again, would you please? Don't die it out. I want it to start again. That's what it's all about, staying alive. Michael Savage, like a street weed, won't go away. Like a conifer. Conifer seed inside your lungs, inside your brain, whatever. I want to talk about feminized fish today. Now, the reason I want to talk about feminized fish is not because I like smoked salmon, but because a study just came out saying that many bass, the male bass in many U.S. rivers have been feminized. Government scientists figure that 1 out of 5 male black bass in American river basins have egg cells growing inside their sexual organs, a sign of how widespread fish feminizing has become. This is amazing. I can't believe this, but I can believe it. Why? Why do you suppose there are intersex fish in America? They're linking it to women's birth control pills and other hormone treatments that seep into rivers. You see, sporadic reports of feminized fish have been reported for a few years. They found that 6% of the nearly 1,500 male fish had a bit of female in them. And you could say, well, all right, what's the big deal? I don't know. Make of it what you want. Make of it what you want. I mean, I think this is, you know, somewhat telltale about our society in general. Male bass in many U.S. rivers feminized. You know, I mean, you ask yourself, what does it have to do with politics? Obama, conservative, liberal, you lie, he lies, we lie. All aboard, we all lie. Feminized fish tales on the Savage Nation. Speaking of fishy tales, I know you've heard every story in the media thus far today, and you're tired of hearing me talking about being blacklisted by the liberals of England and my fight for free speech and my book banned in Britain. I understand all of that. But I have a new subtitle in my book called Beating the Liberal Blacklist. I think it's perfect. It's a major battle, and I'm fighting it. But I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it right now. I don't have what you would call a large social circle. I kind of hang out by myself, maybe my family. That's when they can tolerate me and I can tolerate them. But basically, at this point, I'm not really this way. I mean, I'm actually a gregarious person. When I was a younger guy, I was the, what's that player on the baseball team? The shortstop. I was like the Phil Rizzuto of the crowd. I got everyone going. I was the spark plug. I could just keep everything moving along. But as I got older, and it didn't take too much longer after my 20s, you realize that life is a long path basically by yourself. We're all in it for ourselves. I know you don't want to hear it. You want to believe that you have camaraderie and that people are going to be there for you and it's a team and this and that. But at the end of the day, it's each man for himself, particularly in a capitalist society. Now, I read Marx when I was younger, Karl Marx, the economist. Incidentally, you hear Marxism. I'm going to talk with you a little later today about what Marxism really means from an economic point of view. Because the word Marxism has a negative connotation, as it should, because it accounted for 90 million deaths in the last century of societies that tried to eliminate the profit motive and introduce a controlled, centralized economy run by the Obamas of their time. And what happened was 90 million counter-revolutionaries were killed as a result of Marxism. But he himself was an economist. Karl Marx was an economist. And I'm doing it. I didn't mean to get there already. I was going to talk instead about fish. I was going to talk about lox and salmon and salad niçoise, and I was going to talk about things like that. And I will eventually talk about Karl Marx, I promise you. But the fact of the matter is many of you don't know, you know, Marxian economics, and I want to explain to you what it is and how it can lead to your death. And if you think that Obama is not a Marxist, it's because you don't really understand what Marxism is. In essence, it's a government that wants to eliminate the ups and downs in a marketplace. Karl Marx argued that capitalism is evil because you have boom and bust cycles, and the only way to end the boom and bust cycles and speculation is for the government to take control of the economy and set prices and control the prices of products. And we know where that led in the Soviet Union, massive starvation. We know where that led in China, 60 million people dead from massive starvation. The only thing that's ever worked on the earth was the profit motive. But I got ahead of myself. I want to go back to feminized fish and locks and things of that nature and over the weekend. So as I say, I basically hang out with myself and the dog when I can, you know, do that. So I drive a little, I go here, go there, have a couple of drinks, stop in here, stop in there. And I run into people and they say interesting things to me like, you know, they love my show or this or that. And then one guy says to me, I really like your show, he says, primarily for the entertainment value, because politically I know where you stand. He says, I know that you're very conservative, but that's a given. He said, but a lot of people are very conservative. But he said, the reason I listen to your radio show is because you have a capacity for word, doing things with words that nobody else has, and you can be very entertaining when you're in the right mood. And frankly, I tune in for the lifestyle, and I understand that. Let's move on. San Diego, John, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Mike, how you, I'd like to ask Mark Lloyd, how does he know if somebody's black or white over the radio airwaves? He wants to put, does he even know if I'm black or white? Let me ask him that.
No. Well, how does he know that I'm white or black? I guess he could look at the picture of me.
Yeah, I mean, at first, when I first started listening to you about 10 years ago, I thought you were, you know, you sounded black to me, but it didn't matter to me. It's what you...
I'm glad I sounded black. I told you that. I said on the air the other day, many people used to think what they wanted to think of me, and some people thought I was a black man because of my voice. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.